It's Friday!
Yay!
Oh. You can say that again.
Yay!
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. It is Friday, December 12th, in an odd week. We were on, we were off, we were on, we were off, but we're on right now, closing out this great week, and congratulations. We gave up our time once again for yesterday. For Mitch and Rosie and Ken and all, including our fabulous engineers, the annual Say Detroit fundraiser, unlike anything else in the country, probably the world, raising $2.5 million. Good for them. We've got the team. Oh, and good for you, because you're the folks who called in and sent in your money, and we really appreciate that, that's for sure. The team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason running all the controls. Rich Luzinski keeping an eye on WJR traffic and weather first. And along the way, joined by, well, Dave Rieger. We'll have the movies today. Marie Osborne. Kyle Emmy has helped out along the way. Ann Thomas, our fearless leader. And Kim Smith, my fearless leader, helping us. You can stream us at WJR.com live between noon and 2, or listen on 760 WJR. And later, if you can't be around noon to 2, please go to the podcast at WJR.com. Down at the bottom of the page, it says podcast. Look for me, Paul W. Smith, and you're off to the races. This is one of those shows I wish I didn't have to do. If there was any way I could have rolled over in bed and said, okay, let's just pretend this day did not exist. Why? Well, obviously why, because I am a proud graduate of the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and much to the chagrin of the number of haters that come out of the woodwork, the alumni, the current student body, the general instructors and professors, the members of the football team, all of these people who are taking shots now by the haters, the jealous. I'm sorry, there's only one person responsible for all of this. His name is Sharon Moore. Just another in a long lineup of men using their little head rather than their big head. And he has cost himself his future. One of the greatest jobs he could ever have, $6 million a year. And he blew that for this? Unbelievable. We're going to talk about it. I am so happy that Mike Parsons has booked, Jimmy Brandstetter, Michigan legend and announcer and football player and all. I can't wait to talk to him about how much anger and jealousy there is out there about Michigan. I got to tell you, when Michigan State had its problems with its coach, I did not cheer. I did not get happy and put down Michigan State online or anywhere else. I felt bad for them.
Yeah, I mean, Paul, there's too much human damage and collateral damage in a story like this.
Think of these little girls, the daughters. Think of the wife. Think of all the people who have been dragged into this mess that had nothing to do with it other than Sharon Moore. And how these people can be celebrating this is very sad. Very sad.
And here's the thing. On a side note.
And by the way, we still don't know exactly what happened.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. When I first heard all the updates that were coming out Wednesday night, I thought they weren't true because they were all too unbelievable to be true. And a lot of them turned out to be accurate. But there's still a lot of unconfirmed info out there.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Mostly unconfirmed.
But here's the thing. I think Sharon Moore's career could have survived the affair. He probably would have gotten a job at a smaller school, a division or two down, or become a coordinator. Where he really nuked his chances of a career was the alleged assault, and according to the 911 tape, the weeks of stalking that were reported by his assistant, that's where he messed up. If he would have just kind of, you know, taken the firing, sat out a year or two, I mean, you know, people get rehired after stuff like this all the time. But for him to be arrested and to threaten this woman with a knife, that's where he really, really nuked his career.
If in fact, he threatened her with a knife, because the only person I heard he was threatening early on, and in fact, the truth of the matter is, the first time I heard any of this information a little bit more specific came from Ryan Ermani online, saying that he had a knife, but he held it to his own throat at his wife's house, which it'll now be her house, threatening to kill himself. And then he did the same thing, apparently, allegedly, at the assistant's house. The whole thing is convoluted. And you just said, had he reacted differently or done the right thing? He's already shown, Mike, he does not have the capacity to make the right decisions. He made some very terrible decisions.
Destructive decisions.
Destructive decisions in the midst of the job of his life. Any of us would love a job like that. $6 million a year plus. And so he's not capable of making smart and good decisions.
Right.
But again, we don't yet know for sure everything. We just know it's all bad.
Right. And this all could have been avoided with one decision. And look, I understand it takes two to tango, but number one, the assistant wasn't married. Sharone Moore was married or is married.
Is married.
Number two, he's the superior. She's the subordinate.
Right. That's wrong in every business, period. And zero tolerance is exactly what it should be. Now there's, of course, the conversation. What did they know and when did they know it?
Right.
Did they wait until the national signing day to make sure they could get all the right people? Well, that's stupid because all those same people have the right to change their mind, especially with a controversy and a change of coaches and all of that.
Right, and I believe two players have decommitted since.
What a surprise. So anyway, so he may go before a judge today. Is that still what they're saying?
I hear the arraignment is scheduled for 1 o'clock this afternoon. Now, I'll obviously be watching the news like a hawk. Granted, it's on time, and depending on how long it goes, we may know if there are charges, and if there are charges, what those charges are by the end of the show.
Well, and we may, if depending on what kind of audio there is, I don't know if there's going to be cameras and audio in the courtroom, we may carry it live.
Yeah, I mean, if there is. I'm not sure if there is or
story,
not, but yeah.
It is sadly that big a story. Here is the front page, of course, of both of our newspapers. Moore waits in jail as UM picks up the pieces. Moore jailed as assault investigation continues. First one, Detroit News. Second, Detroit Free Press. But in the New York Post, college football sex scandal. Personnel foul. Get it? Like personal foul, but this is personnel foul. Michigan coach had affair with staffer, threatened her with a knife. Now, they don't know that. We don't know yet any of the real details. We just know it's not good.
Also, I have to say, Paul, last night and this morning, every half hour, I kept getting push notifications. No charges yet. No charges. You don't have to keep telling me there's no charges. Just tell me once and then let me know when there are charges.
Well, this is a bloodbath feast for not only the media, but for people who hate Michigan. And I didn't realize the number was so high, frankly. They're on this like there's no other story. But here's another story. Do you use Instacart? You're not going to like this.
I don't, but I use DoorDash.
Well, because of AI, the dirty downside of AI again is that in Instacart, from the same store, depending on who's doing the ordering, they charge different amounts. For example, a Skippy peanut butter can go anywhere from $2.99 to $3.59, depending on who's doing the ordering. Wheat Thins from $3.99 to $4.89.
What, they like take a look at your income and they charge you more or something? Or
something like that. They're using AI to discover who can afford to pay more for the same product, and they're charging them that. And somebody just blew the whistle on Instacart, and there'll be more to go, but they have the ability to do it, and they're going to do it. What's it called? I saw it in the bottom of this story.
Kind of like surge pricing, but for food.
Yeah, it's price
estimation. Is it called dynamic pricing?
Yes, dynamic pricing. It's exactly right. You know it all.
What was the Jiffy peanut butter price again?
Let's see. For a 16-ounce jar of Skippy.
Okay. Oh, Skippy.
Skippy peanut butter.
Okay.
$2.99 to $3.59.
Skippy.
Ruffles potato chips, $6.47 to $6.99. Cheerios, $7.34 to $7.99.
I made $2.98 Oscar Mayer turkey. Or Instacart. $2.98 for Skippy for me. On Instacart.
So you're a penny less than... Well, these are prices in New York.
Well, they know I'm poor, so they know what they're doing. This is working for me so far.
They go, oh, it's for Danielle. Let's just give it to her.
I think so.
It's a tax write-off.
I mean, I would love that. I'd love that to be the case, but I guarantee you this. They're not going below the lowest price you see in the store. They aren't doing that. That's not why they're doing this. They're doing this to try to figure out how they can get more money and get away with it, but they're not getting away with it. They've been caught. It is Gingerbread House Day. It is a Krispy Kreme Day of the Dozens. You get a dozen donuts for a dollar on Krispy Kremes today. That sounds like a pretty good deal, doesn't it? No reaction. He must be on the phone.
I don't know what gingerbread houses normally go for. So.
No, this is that. This is I skipped to the next story. A dozen donuts for $1 on Krispy Kreme's Day of the Dozens, which is today. A dozen Krispy Kreme donuts for $1 is a tremendous deal.
Yes, it is.
You've never been able to buy things so bad for you for so little money. all right, new Girl Scout cookie flavor to hit the market next month. We'll let you know what that is later. I don't know what it is. It is at 12:16 at 760 WJR. Love the sounds of the season, that's for sure. And by the way, yikes, it's still fall. A low of 21 today, high of 30, 29 degrees right now in Detroit. All right, let's go to a guy who we like speaking with, has strong opinions on lots of things through his experience over the years, and he has years of experience, editor of the Ballinger Report. Bill Ballinger is here. William, happy holiday, Merry Christmas, happy still fall.
Happy holiday to you, Paul W., and winter solstice is just around the corner.
Yeah, at December 21st, which is still farther away than I thought, but a quick note here. This is not on the list of things that they told you I'd be speaking with you about, because they don't know for sure what I'm going to be speaking with you about until I'm speaking with you.
Accurate.
Mike says that's accurate. Here's the question, because it just came up while I was getting ready for the show again. What's your reaction when you see the President of the United States selling his watches on television?
Unseemly, probably not good optics, shouldn't be done, but a lot of things that Donald Trump has done have never been done before, and he's getting away with it so far legally, except that the voting public is becoming increasingly disenchanted with him.
You know, when it occurs to me, and Mike and I were talking about this before the show, you know, he has made a very big deal out of stepping out of his businesses and turning them over to his children to run. But when you go on television and you're selling watches with your name on it, you're in that business. You're smacked. That's not being run by somebody else. That's you.
I agree. He's not even being subtle about it or indirect or whatever. He's right there doing it, and as I say, not a good look.
It's a hard one to get used to, but I guess the people who love him the most are going to let him do whatever it is he feels he needs to do or wants to do. That aside, I have still supported him and certainly am glad that he's president as opposed to who he was running against. Now, yesterday the Senate rejected legislation to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits, which pretty much, unless they come up with something quickly, either side, it means that a lot of Americans are going to see a steep rise in costs at the beginning of this new year. What say you?
I say this is bad news for both Donald Trump and Republicans generally, particularly in Congress, but everywhere they're going to be running next year. A recent survey found that 76% of people who get their insurance through Obamacare and want the subsidies extended would blame President Donald Trump or Republicans in Congress if they are not. The broader public, the vast majority of would all like to see the aid extended, agrees. 48% of voters blame the Republicans, while only 32% pin it to the Democrats, according to a new poll by an outfit called Morning Consult.
Well, the Democrats have always been able to control the story way better than the Republicans ever have. Whatever the truth is one way or another, they have a very willing press that helps them generally come out of these things smelling like a rose. Now, I understand last night at the presidential congressional ball at the White House, the president made a bid for bipartisan collaboration on the, he says, Democrats and Republicans will soon work together on health care. What do you think?
Well, the White House did come up with a plan, finally, a Republican plan, for dealing with this issue, this crisis, not extending the subsidies for 3 years with no change, which is what the Democrats want, but creating health savings accounts and other things that Republicans would say they can accept with an extension. But that failed yesterday. There were actually two plans up for a vote yesterday. One, a Democratic plan, which, as I said, would just extend the subsidies for 3 years, and a Republican plan, which the White House came up with last month, and they both failed pretty much along partisan lines. And so now Donald Trump is talking about, let's see if we can get the Republicans and Democrats together in the remaining 3 weeks or less that we have before January 1st. And if they don't, we're going to have this calamity of rising prices on January 1st. And, you know, Paul W., maybe we're going to have to wait until they actually happen. And the, you know, payments for health care go up dramatically after January 1st. And then maybe finally congressional leaders of both parties will decide this cannot go on. It's actually happening. It's not just a threat. It's happening, and we got to stop it.
I have a feeling, again, you are right about that. Bill Ballinger, editor of the Ballinger Report. Thank you, sir. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Paul W.
I said at the beginning of the show, this be a show that I would have loved to have had to miss for some kind of reason or excuse, but I couldn't come up with any. And so I've got to talk about the obvious big story. I mean, it's the front page of the Detroit News, the Detroit Free Press, newspapers around the country, even, my gosh, the New York Post, college football sex scandal. Front page. Personnel foul. You get it. You know, they do a clever little, instead of personal foul. Personnel foul. Michigan coach had affair with staffer, quote, threatened her with a knife. And then there's a picture of the coach with his wife. So Sharon Moore and his wife, Kelly. And I feel disgust. I feel embarrassment. I feel very sorry for his wife, his daughters, the team, the school. I mean, there's a lot to go around. The only one, I mean, I could even feel sorry for Sharon Moore because he made such a stupid mistake. But be that as it may, he's the one responsible for all of this. And we don't even know what this is yet. It hasn't officially come out. With all of that in mind, I wanted to talk to Jim Brandstetter. He is, without question, a Michigan legend. 1971 All Big Ten offensive lineman. He retired. He was a longtime announcer on this very radio station and did a great job for Michigan football. And I'm sure he is hurting like this graduate is hurting on this day. Jimmy?
How are you, Paul? First of all, before we get into this, I wish you, your family, the various of Christmases, wonderful, healthy, safe New Year, and a tremendous holiday season. We haven't talked in a while, and you're a friend, and I can feel your pain like I feel the pain of it all, too. And I am deeply disappointed, and following it as we go along and hoping and praying, really for Sharone Moore, because I believe Sharone's got some mental health issues at this point, and I hope that he comes out of it more than anything. I hope that we, as a university, put measures in place so that these kinds of things don't happen again. The problem is you're dealing with humans, and humans are imperfect. No matter how we like to think we aren't, humans are imperfect beings, and mistakes will be made. You got to do everything you can to try to avoid them.
Absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. By the way, to you and Robbie and the whole family, all of those wonderful things you said about Kim and I and our family, I think that for you as well. And we haven't talked in a while, and I'm sorry it's about a topic like this.
I agree with you. I just wanted to get that on the table that we miss you and we wish you the best.
Well, same goes here. But you know what? Maybe not to you, but to me. Because you were on the front line, and maybe you got all of this. I am stunned at how many people have come out of the woodwork to hate Michigan at a time like this. You know, when this happened at Michigan State, I never said anything other than I feel very bad for the students, I feel bad for the football team, I feel bad for Michigan State. I never celebrated it. We've got people out there celebrating and putting down Michigan in areas that have nothing to do with this. Academically, the students, the football players, the professors, it's astonishing to me. This was a terribly eye-opening experience for me, Jim.
Well, I'm not surprised. When you're on top, when you're considered one of the best in the world, people take shots at you. Bo Schembechler used to always tell us, be careful with the guy that pats you on the back, because in the next minute he'll have a knife and he'll stab you at the same place. And so in many ways, I'm not surprised. Michigan has enjoyed great success. They've enjoyed a tremendous and impeccable reputation. And there are people out there that want to take them down. And as a Michigan person, as a Michigan graduate, I can only say this, and I'll tell it right to their face. My experience at Michigan was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me in my life, and that will never change. And while, yes, I feel badly about what's going on there today, I know the most important thing I can do is support those people that are there now so that they can improve the situation and make sure that the right people are in place and the right measures are taken so that this never happens again. But to denigrate, to jump on board with the haters and people that are, ready to take us to the bottom, that's not going to happen from me. And but it doesn't surprise me. They've been out there. They will be. They always are going to be. And it'll happen again somewhere down the road. They love to see the big guy taking a fall.
That's very well put. You're exactly right about that, Jim. And it is unfortunate. It's an unfortunate sign of the times. We've watched it happen before, where, in fact, people sometimes build people up, put them on a pedestal, and can't wait to knock them off the pedestal and celebrate that they've been knocked off.
I go back to the days of, remember when Notre Dame hired Charlie Weiss and Ty Willingham and all that? Notre Dame is one of the greatest football programs and great universities in America. And yet when they were going through their troubles, you saw people come out of the woodwork, and talking about, about time notice and all that. That's not the way most people operate, but it is the way some people operate. And I think we're seeing evidence of that in this instance. And to be quite frank, it's hard to stand there and argue only because this is self-inflicted. And that's the most difficult thing for all of us who graduated from Michigan, who love the university, who love the program, and who had one of their great experiences in their lives and in Ann Arbor at that university. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
But that's the reality of it right now.
It is indeed. But again, none of the students, none of the football players, the professors, none of these people are held accountable or responsible for this behavior. It is the behavior of a man who clearly is going through a crisis, Sharon Moore, based on his own bad decisions, but that they're affecting so many people now. But it is bothersome to take the next step and see how many people were so anxious to jump on the hate bandwagon. It's pretty, it says a lot about those people more than it says about Michigan.
I couldn't agree more. It's the old guilt by association thing. And the innocent people, the people that have nothing to do with this, that are taking the slings and the arrows, that's just, in my opinion, short-sighted and completely out of touch and shouldn't be happening. And yet, I think you put it best. Maybe it's just the times we live in.
Well, social media doesn't help anything get better, I can tell you that.
Amen.
Jim Brandstetter, Michigan legend, all Big Ten offensive lineman, great broadcaster on this very radio station. Best to you and Robbie and the family for the holiday, Christmas season, and the new year.
Thanks, Paul. It's always great to talk with you, and I hope you have a great holiday, too. Be well, okay?
All right. Thank you, Jimmy. It is 1243 at 760 WJR. All right. Information is coming in right now as we speak. First one I've seen is from Jordan Pear of MLive. Dateline Pittsfield Township, charges have been authorized against former University of Michigan head football coach Sharon Moore. That's been confirmed. Moore, 39, set to be arraigned on a felony charge of third-degree home invasion, as well as two misdemeanor charges of stalking and entering without permission. Does that mean he had a key to the place? Maybe, because it didn't say breaking and entering, just
so, actually,
entering.
So, Paul, I'm reading the Free Press here, and it said that count is breaking and entering.
Oh, because they write here, stalking and entering without permission. So there's a discrepancy.
Yeah, so the Free Press is reporting what you said. One count of third-degree felony home invasion, one count misdemeanor stalking related to a domestic relationship, and one count misdemeanor breaking and entering.
Right, so that's not what I said. The MLive says entering without permission. There's a big difference. We'll find out what it is. See, even when the information is released, we have discrepancies here. It's apparently he will officially be in the district court there on Washtenaw Avenue before the magistrate, Odetella. What? Her name? Odetella M. Odetella? Seriously?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Anyway, 1 o'clock, so in less than 8 minutes. So maybe in the news we'll hear more or right after the
news. We'll keep an ear out for another source to be the tiebreaker here.
Yeah, the tiebreaker. Well, Evan Brown is here, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire, and he's here to talk about a very serious case regarding the alleged murderer of Charlie Kirk. And so, Evan, welcome to the program. What can you tell us?
Oh, hello there. And what can I tell you other than it looks like, at least for now, the cameras will stay in the courtroom as they go through these very early hearings in the process. And that was a big topic yesterday at the hearing. This was the first time Tyler Robinson appeared physically in the courtroom. Up until this point, his proceedings involved him joining in via video conferencing from the jail. He was in civilian clothing, as his lawyers got the judge to agree to. So he was wearing a dress shirt and a tie and a pair of slacks. But as it turns out, what we call the pool camera, this is the camera that is acting in the stead of all the news organizations, they had placed it near the defense table, which was very odd, and that gave expanded view of everything, and in that case, it also showed Robinson to be shackled, both at his wrists and at his ankles. And that is a violation of the court's decorum rules. So the lawyers had a field day with that yesterday.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so And anyhow, the decision was eventually made by the judge to have the camera move to the other side of the courtroom and so therefore not be so close. And I also thought it was a little peculiar when I saw the shot at first. It was very, very close. The defense was also saying that the camera could see the screens of their computers. And that's, you know, any defense lawyer would object to that, I would think. Anyhow, we're still very, very early in on this proceedings. And, in fact, they set a date for an actual preliminary hearing when they start evaluating evidentiary matters. And that's not till May. And so that's 6 months from now. So this is going to be a very, very long, long proceeding. No, not kidding.
Oh, my goodness. Ay, ay, ay. It's because they're so backed up?
I suspect that there's the court's own schedule has to be taken into account, and the defense has the right to examine all things before it, and so that this can take some time. Justice never moves quickly. We all remember how long it took O.J. Simpson's trial to be completed. I suspect that we'd probably have as much interest in this as we had in that.
Prosecutors have charged this kid who smiled with his lawyers, with aggravated murder in the September 10th shooting of the conservative activist on the Utah Valley University campus, just a few miles north of the Provo courthouse. In fact, they plan to seek the death penalty, which is already fraught with all kinds of hoops and things they have to jump over to get that done. But that's what they're going for. And most people, other than people who are against the death penalty, most people think that's what they should be seeking, because what he did was a cold-blooded, planned murder, if he did it. Did I have to say that? I guess I had to.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Well, I'm just a talk show. I'm just a talk show host. You're the journalist.
Yes, but, remember, you can still be, subpoenaed. So I'll leave it at that.
I could use the publicity.
You don't want that, really. But at the same time, you mentioned that he was seen smiling with his attorneys. And yes, he was. And the problem, and this goes back to the camera being so close to him, that image, we don't know why he smiled. We don't know the context. He was getting to see his family for the first time in a while, I think. His attorney may have mentioned something humorous or ironic, and it just was a reaction. But that screenshot that's shot from the feed in today's environment becomes an instant meme, and that could be prejudicial, and that's going to make things harder when you're trying to pick a jury.
I would suspect the people who actually had T-shirts made up showing the moment that Charlie Kirk was killed with blood gushing out of his neck, that would be an effective piece also. That would show up and affect people in their decision-making process
react. The court couldn't control that. The court can control what goes on in the courtroom.
Oh, you're so right. Doggone it, Evan. You're always so right. Yes. Okay, my friend. have a nice weekend, okay?
You too. Take care.
Evan Brown, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, and generally almost always, I'll say always, right. That's why you listen to WJR with us. Stay with us now. As we mentioned going into the news, at 1 o'clock it was expected that Sharon Moore would be appearing in Washtenaw County Court. It looks to me, Mike, like he is via camera. Is that what it looks like to you as well?
Yeah, I don't see him on camera, but I don't see him physically in the courtroom.
I saw him sitting a moment ago in a cell, a very small cell that looked like it was set up.
Yeah, Danielle said she saw the same thing.
Yeah, just sitting there. We can hear one lawyer is talking right now. We have no idea who the lawyer is, but we'll do this so you feel like you're hearing what's happening as it's happening. Then we'll go over all this stuff. Here's an attorney speaking.
There continued to be defendant making numerous phone calls and sending numerous texts from that time moving forward that she did not answer, did not respond to, and did not want. That eventually she presented herself to the University of Michigan, cooperated in some form of investigation there. As we all now know, defendant was at some point on Wednesday afternoon fired from his employment. He then, at some point soon thereafter, came to her apartment in the address that is alleged in the complaint, barged his way into that apartment, immediately then proceeded to a kitchen drawer, grabbed several butter knives and a pair of kitchen scissors, and began to threaten his own life. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to make you watch. My blood is on your hands. You ruined my life. And a series of very, very threatening, intimidating, terrifying, quite frankly, statements and behaviors there in that apartment. It was only then, Your Honor, when the victim, she called her attorney and then at some point indicated she was going to call the police, and then he left. And so, Your Honor,
all right, so I'm assuming this is the prosecutor. I sadly can't see any name or anything. But the court has authorized these following charges against Sharon Moore. Home invasion. Some of these are shocking to me in terms of the light charges. Home invasion in the third degree in violation of blah, 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 for allegedly unlawfully entering the victim's residence to commit the crime of stalking and committing that crime while in the residence. Home invasion in the third degree is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in prison and a $2,000 fine. That looks like it's the biggest one. Then there's stalking in violation of a such and such, engaging in a willful course of conduct involving repeated or continuing harassment of the victim. Stalking, I can't believe this. Stalking is a misdemeanor?
Yeah, you'd think stalking would be felony.
Yeah, punishable by up to 1 year in jail and a $1,000 fine. And then here's why there was confusion from what I read to you from the M Live and what you had from one of the newspapers. Breaking and entering, or entering without breaking in violation of this, blah, 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 for allegedly unlawfully entering the dwelling of a victim with whom Mr. Moore had a dating relationship. A violation of this statute is also a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 90 days in jail and a $500 fine. That's like nothing.
Right.
That surprises the heck out of me.
And it sounds like we've got a little bit more clarity about what happened at the assistant's home from that little snippet we heard. I guess it didn't sound like, from what I heard, he entered the home with a knife. It sounds like
It didn't sound like he broke in either. And it didn't sound like he was attacking her. He was threatening to kill himself. This is what Ryan Ermani put online before anybody the other day.
Yeah.
He had it online. And he said that what had happened was Moore was to his wife and then to an assistant at school, which turned out to be this woman, apparently, threatening to kill himself.
Yeah. So from what I understood from the preliminary reports, he threatened to kill himself with a knife at home. And then they said that there was a knife involved with the assistant. And it sounds like when he got into her home, he went to a drawer and he pulled out a knife and threatened to kill himself as well.
He pulled out a bunch of butter knives,
right,
which is kind of bizarre, and scissors, which could have done real damage, too. But again, there's no word from what I've been seeing or reading or hearing where he was going to attack anybody but himself.
Yeah,
which is not good. I mean, this is not good, but it is also back with what Ryan said. He was arrested initially to protect himself. He was put into protective custody for him because they were worried he was going to harm himself, kill himself.
Yeah, I would imagine if he threatened her with a knife, there would have been charges for that as well.
Absolutely. So. There's no question. I mean, of course there would be. But anyway, so that's what we have so far. We'll see what else is going to happen. It's depressing. It's disgusting. It is horrifying, but it does not paint the entire University of Michigan in the colors that they're being painted by people who just can't wait to hate Michigan. And I had no idea there were so many of them.
Well, another big part of the story, too, Paul, is that all day yesterday, people thought that Ward Manuel was going to be losing his job. There is even some internet reports. False right. reports, Dave Portnoy being the biggest, the highest profile, saying that Ward Manuel has been let go. But then it turned out that the regents met and they decided to keep him in his current position as athletic director.
Ward Manuel still athletic director after U of M regents meet, but that doesn't keep the people from writing because somebody else wrote today, and I don't know if it was Wojo. Forgive me if I got it wrong. I don't remember who that I was looking at earlier this morning that somebody was saying it was time for a fresh start.
That was Sean Windsor, because I remember seeing that headline as well.
I mean, wasn't that, was the point there he thought Ward Manuel should go?
Yeah, it says it's, the headline, and of course, like you say, Paul, you don't, the columnists don't write the headline, but the headline says Sharon Moore scandal, not Ward Manuel's fault, but time for a fresh start. And maybe, you know, maybe Ward Manuel might be out. Maybe they figured, okay, well, finding a new athletic director and football coach at the same time might be too tall of an order. But at least for now, it seems like he's gotten a vote of confidence from the regions.
It's a tough situation all the way around. And what is this other headline? WDIV general manager Bob Ellis resigns. What's this?
I don't know
the story behind that?
No, that's the other thing. It seems like it was abrupt. He put out some kind of statement saying that it's time for him to tackle a new challenge, you know, the corporate speak. But this, and I don't know about people in the building, but this seems somewhat abrupt as well.
And it's not, generally speaking, oh, they're on Fox right now, they're showing him in Washtenaw County in a obviously a special lockup for doing these kinds of on-camera things.
Right.
From what I can see right now, you can see Sharon Moore. But anyway, that's not back to, I'm sorry, I'm jumping around, but back to Bob Ellis. I never heard complaints about him, never heard anything bad, and that's a pretty good job to just walk away from.
Yeah, let's see here. After a great deal of reflection, I've decided to resign from my role as general manager of Local 4 WDIV, effective immediately. This decision was difficult, but after 3 decades at Graham Media Group, I believe it is time for me to take on something different.
Wow.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. Right.
That in itself also shines a weird spotlight on it.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that story. I mean, we've had Bob Ellis on a couple of times. I've liked my interactions with him, but
yeah.
We'll see if we'll see if anything else comes out of the story.
All right,
as well.
Quickly, is there anyone around who has not seen the video of the guy jumping out of a plane in Australia and having his reserve chute open prematurely and catching on the tail of the plane?
Yeah, and then what he had to cut himself free of the backup chute
and hope that the right chute would open when he needed it.
Right, which it did, luckily.
I mean, that's just, if you're looking for a reason not to jump out of a plane if you don't have to.
Right.
That's it.
I've never had that urge, Paul.
I've never had the urge.
No.
I've never had the urge to climb a mountain, jump out of a plane, rappel from a mountain. I just never have had those urges.
Yeah, I think my midlife crisis, I'm going to buy a Corvette instead of go skydiving.
Well, the people at General Motors will help you with that.
I'll lose everything else, but at least I'll have the Corvette.
Well, it's not a bad thing to have, except it's repoed. Small to live in.
Well,
what's that?
I said until it's repoed.
Oh, okay. Well, let's not think about that. By the way, you can get a 10-year payment on that thing.
Wow.
Anyway, don't even get me started on that. Retired Brigadier General Doug O.D. Slocum coming up. Be interesting to get his take on the Venezuelan oil tanker sweepstakes that are out there. We've got one, and we're looking for more, I guess. And we'll get his thoughts on that as we continue. Focus with Paul W. Smith and the team on WJR. It is a pleasure and privilege, as always, to welcome our retired Brigadier General, Doug O.D. Slocum, former Air Wing Commander for the 127th Fighter Group at Selfridge Air National Guard Base. General, always a pleasure, sir.
It is always great to talk with you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Give me your take on the fact that we are preparing to intercept more ships transporting Venezuelan oil following the seizure of a tanker this week, as this is increasing pressure on the Venezuelan president, Maduro, who I just can't imagine will be here for that much longer. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, when I hear the news bites, a lot of times my thought is that, you know, there's a lot of history of what's gone on in Venezuela that's led to where we are today. You know, when you think of the fact that he led or does lead a cartel, and he is indicted on drug trafficking, human trafficking charges, and a lot of other things here in the United States, and has a $50 million bounty on his head. He's not the recognized elected leader of Venezuela. You know, two election cycles where he just declared himself the winner. So we're not talking about what most people would even refer to as a legitimate government here. And what is the money being used for? What, you know, the drugs that are being run, et cetera. It's quite a dilemma that we're having to deal with a nasty neighbor in the South at this point.
It really is quite the dilemma that it's going to be coming to a head, no question about it. I support the president in all of these various activities because guys like Maduro and others have gotten away with murder, and I mean literally murder, and we just don't think that that should happen. And we have a president who doesn't believe that should happen either, and instead of just talking about it, he's doing something about it, and I think that's excellent. I really do. And would you tell me if you thought he didn't have a sound military ground to stand on?
Well, I mean, obviously the objective is clear to me. You know, the idea about striking the boats and people talking about are they legal strikes and not, you get into a lot of legal nitinoid type of things with it, you know, very particular points through the lawyers and all. But in reality, it is valid. The military lawyers have verified that. And, you know, the overall objective, you know, nobody wants killing. But the fact is, you already mentioned it. There's been murder that's been going on at behest of the head of this government. And I hope that we're able to put up pressure without it turning into an open conflict. That would be the ideal, as we turn up the pressure in such a way that the people of Venezuela rise up or that this dictator flees.
Don't let me forget, and these things happen in the pressure of time here, if you can remember to not let me forget retired Brigadier General Doug Odie Slocum, former Air Wing Commander for the 127th Fighter Group at Selfridge Air National Guard Base. Your take or thoughts on the Democrats who went to the trouble of creating a video to make our fighting men and women in uniform even second guess or feel like they might be following illegal orders. I want to get to that in a minute, but it's more important at this moment that a compromised draft of the annual defense policy bill released late Sunday maintains authorization to spend $14 million for infrastructure upgrades at Selfridge ahead of the arrival of the two new airframes, the F-15EX fighters and the KC-46 tankers. I am assuming that you greet that news with open arms.
Well, absolutely. It's basically making a plan that's been in place. It's empowering a plan that's been in place for a long time. You know, through the Adjutant General, through the National Guard, the plan to extend Selfridge's runway to the north, which helps with the safety footprint, the noise footprint, and it's important for the vital long-term success of Selfridge. And just improvements to the runways and taxiways that helps the wing be more efficient. And that's about a $124 million project. So these are basically down payments to a needed investment in the infrastructure of Michigan's hometown air base.
Yeah, it is. It's excellent. It means we're moving in the right direction. It doesn't cover it all, as you point out, General. It is a fabulous down payment and shows that their minds are in the right place on all of this. Let me ask you, if you were actively now the general and you had all of your people that report to you, and all of a sudden you see a video on camera that's getting all kinds of attention of these Democrat lawmakers basically telling your soldiers that they don't have to do anything illegal and they shouldn't follow any illegal orders, how would you respond and react to that? Would you ignore it? Would you have said something to your troops or what?
Boy, that is actually a very difficult question, the way that you phrased it there, because, you know, what they say, don't follow an illegal order, that is factually true.
But and they've already sworn to that.
Who's sworn to? Oh, yes, the oath. You bet. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But the insinuation then is that there are going to be or there are now illegal orders. That's where I think it really muddies the water a lot in the minds of the individuals that are serving in our military right now. So from my perspective, I don't think it does us a lot of good to bring that level of doubt, because we do also take an oath to follow the orders of the President of the United States, to follow the Constitution. You know, what is an illegal order? And there's not a lot of folks who would be able to even articulate that, much less understand it in any particular situation. In today's world, especially when it comes to lethal decisions, those are vetted through a very long chain of decision makers, and that risk is accepted way higher in the, up in the food chain of the chain of command of the military, not down most of the time at a level where I think that this video is aimed.
You know, it's interesting, I must tell you, General Doug Odie Slocum, when they were attacking the administration for the second tap, the double tap, if you will, the second missile at the boat carrying drugs, because there were two survivors, and they went through the second hit. My feeling is they should just do two hits every time, then they won't have to worry about any survivors and have to go through all this again, but that's another story. I was stunned to hear the number of military lawyers who were involved in that decision. I never even think of that, but I guess that's the way of life right now.
Well, and that's kind of what I was alluding to with my discussion about where the risk and all is accepted with all this, because the lawyers don't seem to have an issue with it at all. It was very clear in their mind. And what we hear happened versus what really happened, I think, once again, what you hear in the news isn't always the case, and it certainly has been two different sides of that story.
Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for your continued service to this great country of ours. If there's ever anything we can do for you, never hesitate to ask.
Always great to talk with you. Have a wonderful weekend.
You do the same. Retired Brigadier General Doug Odie Slocum, former Air Wing Commander for the 127th Fighter Group at Selfridge Air National Guard Base. He did a great job when he was there in charge. He still does a great job. And we appreciate him joining us here with Paul W. Smith in Focus on WJR at 128. Dave Rieger earned a great job, and he helps us in so many ways around the station. And hopefully after we get off the air with my computer. But that's another story, because Rieger, I hope you're listening, Rieger Reviews It, sponsored by Wigley's famous Eastern Market corned beef. The temperatures are downright cold outside, which means it's time to get yourself to Jimmy D's restaurant and lounge for a hot corned beef dinty or Reuben sandwich. Proudly serving their legendary Wigley's corned beef sandwiches since 1987. Stacked high, modestly priced. That's Jimmy D's on Grosbeck in Clinton Township. Wigley's famous Eastern Market corned beef. David, how are you?
Hold on a second.
Where's
Good,
David?
Paul. I'm right here.
There we are.
Live from Guernsey's, Paul.
Oh, you're out at Guernsey's because you're running the show. Yes.
Well, Ray is out here with me. So.
Okay. Yes. So Ray Templin, and you, we couldn't do it without you. And it just proves, here we have, what once again, Dave Rieger doing two different jobs at once. That's just the way it is. But anyway, so now you're not going to be able to help me with my computer because you're going to be busy afterwards. But that's okay. Because you're doing something that's so great along there with Ryan Ermani and Jamie Edmonds, as I have passed the torch along for one of the greatest things we do, Christmas on Us. And you're going to hear all about it live from Guernsey Farms Dairy, where Karen Kinville, the youngest of 14, with her dad, John McGuire, starting the business. Now the third generation is there running the show, Joe Kinville, Greg McGuire. We'll get into that in just a moment. But let's get into the movies. Ella McKay in theaters. What is this?
Yeah, so this is a movie set in 2008, so a time that may be less politically polarizing era. And Ella McKay, she is a attorney, and her life is thrown into disarray when her longtime mentor, the incumbent governor, played by Albert Brooks, by the way, he accepts a cabinet position in the incoming Obama administration. And so it thrusts her into being the governor at a very young age of 36. And in addition to now being the governor, they don't necessarily tell you what state. She also has to deal with her her father, who's very troubled, her aunt, because her mom has passed away, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, kind of serves as her surrogate mother, and also her meddlesome aide, Julie Kavner, and she also narrates in this film. And so it's just about her trying to juggle all of these balls in the air, and it's a comedy, and it's very well done, and we do have a clip.
Let's listen to Ella McKay.
You're 34. You just became governor of the state you were born and raised in. Are you thinking about your mom?
Yeah,
me too. Ella, your father, your brother, and your husband.
Where is she?
Can I tell her what it's about?
It's about how she ruined everything.
All right, I'll tell her that.
What? A ticking time bomb in your life.
You didn't want me big sistering, but what happened to that great girl?
Susan, would you be my girlfriend?
A lot of time has passed, and we've been with other people, or not.
You can use a scream.
Scream? All right. No.
Oh.
No, I might not be able to stop.
It's too bad. I was going to join you.
This movie's actually really funny. It's got a lot of good actors and actresses in it, and I think people will like it. And I'm going to give it 3 Wiggly sandwiches, Paul. I think people will like this movie.
I saw the promo commercial for it. And that scene with Jamie Lee Curtis screaming, apparently, yeah, with her daughter, is funny. I mean, it's just funny.
I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis, so famous
but
parents,
obviously. Does she die off early? I hated to hear she dies.
Well, we don't
She's
want to
the
talk.
Mother. I thought you said
no,
she was a
no,
mother who
no,
died.
No, no, she no. Jamie Lee Curtis is the aunt.
Oh, okay, good.
Main character's good. Mother, she passed away, so she is
All
like
right,
her mother
okay.
figure. But think about Jamie Lee Curtis and her famous parents, and like she's been in Hollywood since the day her first movie, obviously Halloween, where she became very famous, and she's just been like just in Hollywood forever and still
a
going
survivor.
Strong. Survivor. Yeah,
many people in her position have self-destructed over the years.
100%.
She did not.
Yeah, Tony yeah. Curtis and Janet Leigh, if I'm not mistaken, her famous parents. So, yeah.
I love Albert Brooks. Good. I didn't even, yeah. honestly, didn't know he was still alive. I'm glad he is.
He's great.
And yeah. Woody Harrelson, is there, yes. there's got to be marijuana somewhere in this. If Woody
yeah,
is,
he's,
Woody is in this.
He's estranged, and he plays like a philanderer, and he's trying to get back in her life after so many years. Love Woody Harrelson. So.
He's a great actor, too. All right. 3 Wigglies. Let's go to the one you can watch at home. What's Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery? Where do we find that?
So this is on Netflix. This is our boy Daniel Craig, who I know better, who everybody knows better as James Bond, actually. He plays Detective Benoit Blanc, and this is the third in the Knives Out mysteries. And he is called to a secluded religious community in upstate New York to solve a seemingly impossible locked room murder. And the film is set in an atmosphere with church and graveyards, and it leads into the themes of guilt and faith and morality and the Catholic Church. And a lot of big names in this movie also. Josh Brolin, who plays Monsignor Jefferson Wicks, Mila Kunis, Glenn Close, Kerry Washington, Jeremy Renner, Thomas Hayden Church. A lot of big names in this. And this was originally released limited theaters around Thanksgiving. Now it's available to everyone on Netflix, and we also have a clip for this one.
You're the only one on stage with the Monsignor at the time of his killing. You're the only one at that church who hated his guts.
The spirit really moved him today, huh?
So tell me,
what the hell happened?
Everyone thinks I did it. I didn't do it.
This goes way beyond normal police work. This is something even I have not experienced. A perfectly impossible crime.
This case is solvable, right?
Well, I'm incapable of not solving a crime. So you'll see. It's fun.
This is very good. As all the Knives Out movies have been, I will also give this one 3 Wiggly sandwiches. I think people will enjoy it. Although, every time, like I said, I see Daniel Craig, I see James Bond. So,
yeah, you know what? What I can't understand is, if I'm not mistaken, and I get these things wrong a lot, but didn't Daniel Craig actually say, you know what? I had a great time being James Bond, but now I want to do other things?
100%. He did.
Who would walk away from that?
A lot of actors walked away from James Bond, but I agree. I mean, you know, he was great. You know, if you go through the list of the actors that have played Bond, He's right up there with my favorites, Pierce Brosnan, Roger Moore. A lot of people love Sean Connery, the original.
You didn't love Sean Connery?
I did like Sean Connery, but he was before my time, though.
Oh, okay. All right. You know. Well, there are many of us who Sean Connery is James Bond. Now, there were others that were good, too, and I can't go through the whole list like you just
right.
did. But, and how many Wigglies are we giving?
I'll give that one three Wigglies. Yeah, three Wigglies. I think
this is a good day.
Yeah, I think just that they're both really well done, and I think people will enjoy them. And it's a good movie to watch as we head into the holiday season, right?
Yeah, and you know what? I just started watching. Oh, I won't be able to remember it, but I'm like five seasons behind. They're pushing it like crazy right now. What is it? What's the thing on Netflix, a series? Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. I just started watching. I'm about to watch the sixth episode of the first season. So I'm a million miles away, but it did hook me.
But you got plenty of time. You got plenty of time over the holiday season to catch up. And then after the first year, we can revisit. You can tell us what you think.
Okay. All right. My assignment is in. Thank you for the good job you always do. Have fun out there. You're going to, because Guernsey Farms Dairy is a very special place with very special people. We're going to talk about that as we continue in Focus on WJR. For many, many years, it was my pleasure and privilege to host what you're about to hear called Christmas on Us. And you, our listeners, have always answered the call by giving us names of people in the military, in your family or in your neighborhood or wherever they might be, that deserved our attention. Now, we can only do a few, but each one of these families are representative of thousands and thousands of other family members that deserve this kind of attention. It was my pleasure from the beginning to host Christmas on Us, but as you know, once I left the morning show and started doing this show, noon to two, I started slowly but surely giving up on some of the things that I've done. That sounded bad, giving up on. Transitioning. Because the next generation of the radio station are there, and they should start doing many of these things that I used to do. But slowly but surely, I let my clutches go, and I let these things happen. And when I was talking to Ann Thomas about the idea that maybe it was time to turn this over, and I thought of Jamie Edmonds, because in fact at that moment she was doing commercials for Guernsey Farms Dairy, and then I thought, well, I know that they want Ryan in as many things as he can. So it was Ann who was smart enough to put Ryan Ermani and Jamie Edmonds together. I don't know. Is this the first time the two of you have done a show together?
That
on WJR, yes.
An incredible thought. But when's the last?
We've been friends for so long.
Friends, but we've never done a show together.
Correct.
We've been, you know, in a former TV life, perhaps, at competing stations. But my goodness, Paul W. Smith, I can't tell you what an honor it is to sit next to Jamie Edmonds here.
Well,
is fun.
And I'm so happy you used my full name, because I often do forget who I am. But listen, but here you are. I'm just going to tell you that the two of you have one of the best franchises this radio station has ever had, in that you cannot thank our military people enough. You can't do enough for them, but you can always do more. And that's what we do with Christmas on Us. And so I am thrilled, Jamie Edmonds and Ryan Ermani, that you will be doing that for the next 2 hours. And you have met, I'm sure by now, Karen Kinville. And you probably already know she's the youngest of 14 children.
And she is saying to us right now that she misses you. She put her hands up in the air and wants to tell you that.
Well, I miss Karen. I miss her son, Joe, who's running the show now, Joe Kinville and Greg McGuire, the family members, third generation owners. And we remember fondly John McGuire, who started this business oh so long ago. And you tell Karen, if she can't hear me right now, if she can,
she can hear you loud and clear.
Karen, I miss you, but it was time for me to pass the mantle, to the torches pass to the next generation at this great radio station. And it's just wonderful to know that they now understand we're the best eggnog and lemonade.
We need a sample of that, Paul.
Oh, you are going to have as much eggnog and lemonade as you could possibly ever have. And any ice cream, because it's the world's greatest Guernsey Farms dairy ice cream. And the restaurant there does a great job with the food. So you are in for a fabulous day, as are our listeners, and most importantly, the wonderful military families.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? And this is, as you said, Paul, I'm glad you did. This is a thank you. That's what today is. And we can't. We wish we could do it every day, and
right.
Maybe we'll start.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just start thanking them every day.
Well, we should. Anytime you see them walking down the street, thank you for your
service.
Well,
we do that. Yeah, that's a good point. We do that whenever we can. And it's always an emotional show for me. And I just now I'm finding, even if I'm not doing the show, it's emotional. God bless you guys. Have a great show. I know you will. Thanks, Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Luzinski, Dave Rieger, Marie Osborne, Kyle Emmy, Ann Thomas, and Kim Smith, and our greatest audience. Regards, Paul W. Smith.